It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
I've got one question for you. Can you feel it? Is it in your bones? Can you feel it yet? College football is back. We've already had games last week. We had games Thursday night. We saw Ohio State look exposed in the first half, and in the second half come up big against Indiana and run away with it. Oklahoma State running away with a victory against Tulsa on Thursday night. And then Friday night, last night, we saw Washington just do away with Rutgers. We saw Wisconsin sitting there in the first half in a tough game with Rutgers. Rutgers, seriously? But in the second half, they pulled away. And, of course, the Rocky Mountain Showdown last night where Colorado State was not only playing CU, they were playing the refs, and they lost a tight one, 17-3. Good job by CSU after the victory they had last week against Oregon State. We talked to Gina Mizell from Oregon last week about that game. She didn't see it going that way, and I didn't see CSU coming out as strong as they did. But college football is back. But before we get into that, we had two passings this week. Yes, we are being inundated right now with death in the world of college sports. A couple weeks ago, of course, we had Ara Parseghian die. Then, this past week, we had two national championship basketball coaches pass away. Judd Heathcote, longtime coach at Michigan State. He was the coach of Magic Johnson in 1979 when Michigan State beat Indiana State. Magic Johnson versus Larry Bird in the NCAA championships. That was my first real experience with the Final Four, and I've got to tell you, it has sunk in. It sunk in with me. That's when I began loving college sports. I already loved college football. I saw Billy Sims run at Oklahoma, Johnny Rogers. You know, I saw all those great players in the 70s when I was a child, but it was a 1979 championship game, Indiana State, Michigan State, Bird versus Magic. Judd Heathcote, the coach of Michigan State, he passed away this week. And then just a couple days ago, Raleigh Massimino. If you're younger, you're going, who? He was the Villanova coach, 1983, that took down Georgetown in the Final Four and won the national championship for Villanova back in 1983. Two great coaches leaving us. I would say too early. They were both old. I mean, it's going to happen to all of us. We're going to get older. We're going to die. But when we lose Era and then we lose Frank Broyles, the longtime AD at Arkansas, we talked about him, how he was very instrumental in making the Power Five what they are. Longtime coach, won a national championship at Arkansas, and then this past week, we had Judd and we had Raleigh Massimino. Sad times in the world of college sports, but let's not be sad because college football is back. And it's back with a fury. We're going to open up with what they're calling the GOAT, the greatest opener of all time. And that would be Alabama. Florida State is the first time that a number one team has opened up with a top three team. So obviously, number two or number three. It's the first time that's ever happened. And we get to see that later today in the brand new Mercedes-Benz Dome there in Atlanta. They're calling it the new Taj Mahal of college football. They're doing that because, of course, the Hall of Fame of college football is there in Atlanta as well. They're trying to unseat Jerry World or the Death Star, which we'll go to later today as well. We're going to be talking to people at the Mercedes-Benz Dome. We're going to be talking to people at the Death Star, Jerry World, AT&T Stadium there in Arlington, Texas. But the best thing about college football being back is we got coach news conferences, which means we get coach speak. And here's Nick Saban.
I think this is a great opportunity for our team to play in a great environment, new stadium in Atlanta, against one of the top teams, no doubt, in the country. Florida State has got a lot of returning starters on both sides of the ball, especially at skill positions, quarterback, defensive players, however you want to figure it, 10 or 11 guys coming back on defense, which one of the top defenses in the country a year ago.
Of course, he's talking about the matchup later today with Florida State in the GOAT, the greatest opener of all time. I'm excited. I know you're excited. We finally have college football back. But what does Florida State coach Jimbo Fisher have to say?
Starting this first week, looking forward. We've got a great team. We're playing Alabama. Again, they have nothing but respect for Alabama. They've done a tremendous job with their program in the past, in the present, and in the future. I know they will. Their coach, they have an outstanding coach. Nick does as good a job as anybody. Does a great job preparing his team, and you know they'll be ready. Outstanding players. They play very hard, very physical, very well coached. Have big guys, dynamic guys, playmakers in them. They have it across the board. They can throw it. They can catch it. They can run with it. They can defend. They can cover. They do all the things that you have to do to be successful, and they're great in a special team.
Now, you have to realize that Jimbo Fisher used to be an assistant of Nick Saban's. He was on Nick Saban's staff. So, what does that mean? Jimbo Fisher is 7-0 in season openers. Nick Saban, 10-0 versus former assistants. Something's got to give tonight in Atlanta. What's it going to be? We're going to break that down here in a minute as we go to Atlanta. But first, we also got to talk about Michigan and Florida. Another big game happening this week. And you look at that and you go, wow, Florida has like suspended half of their team. What is Coach Jim McElwain going to do? You remember, of course, Jim McElwain was right up the road at Colorado State, and he is just laying it on the line.
There are no excuses, you know. I don't think I've ever made excuses for anything we've ever done or anything I've ever done. It's just it whatever hand you're dealt, you go play it, and that's what we're going to do.
I don't really know if he can come up with any excuses. Granted, the program is not as dirty as it was under Urban Meyer or even before that, but it's not looking good at Florida. All the suspensions, how will they hold up against the University of Michigan later today at the Jerry World in Arlington, Texas? We're going to come back and talk to Pat Dooley from Gainesville. Well, actually, he'll be in Dallas talking to him about the Florida Gators. We'll also talk to Angelique Shengelis, who is with the Detroit News. She's in Dallas covering Michigan. And we'll also talk to Ira Schofel with warchant.com. He'll be talking about Florida State. And, of course, Aaron Suttles with the Tuscaloosa News. He'll be giving us the lowdown on Alabama as they get set to meet up in Atlanta. But Sunday, right here on Extra Sports 1300, we've got Texas A&M and UCLA. Luckily, they're not playing this game in Texas because we know everything that's happened down there in southeast Texas with Hurricane Harvey this past week. Everything's still underwater. We'll be talking to a gentleman from Houston. He worked for the Houston Chronicle, but he's stationed up in College Station. Stationed in College Station. I kind of like how that works out. He covers the Aggies exclusively. He'll be giving us a lowdown on the Texas Aggies as they travel out to the Rose Bowl to take on the UCLA Bruins. You can hear that game Sunday afternoon right here on Extra Sports 1300. So when we come back, we're going to the site of the biggest games of the week, and we'll do that each and every week right here on the University of Fish. I am the professor. You're listening to Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
It is game day, and we have some big games today. One of them, of course, being Florida State and Alabama, but we're going to talk about that in just a minute. Right now, we're joined by Pat Dooley. He is with the University of Florida. He's a beat writer for them. They're taking on Michigan in the Death Star, Jerry World, right there in Arlington, Texas. It's game day, Pat. You ready?
Well, I have no choice. You know, I mean, it's so funny because the summer was kind of short this year because Florida went so deep in baseball, and And then our golf tournament got delayed a little bit, so it was the summer. But then you get to it, and it is, you know, you better be ready, or it's because it's going to blow by in a hurry.
Now, there's been some back and forth sparring in the media between Jim McElwain and Jim Harbaugh. Who do we think is going to be under center today?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, everybody's guess, but my gut is it's going to be Felipe Franks. But I don't think he's going to play all three, but I think he's going to play at least two. I think the other thing is, as I've mentioned to people down here, Florida hadn't had a quarterback go the whole season since Tebow. So just because one guy starts today doesn't mean he's going to be starting, you know, against Tennessee or against Georgia or anything. So you got to kind of wait and see how this plays. The good thing for Florida is they've got options. They've got different guys they can go to if somebody twists their ankle or something happens. They can go to somebody else.
How does the rest of the offense look through fall camp?
Well, they feel like they've got the pieces around them. They feel like they've got a good offensive line, which they have not really had the last 2 years. They feel like they've got a lot of receivers, even with Callaway suspended. They feel like they've got multiple running backs, but again, they've got to get holes, and their tight ends are good. I mean, all the pieces are there to have a good offense, and obviously the quarterback's a big part of it.
Now, no matter whether you're facing Wilton Spate or Jamie O'Korn, what is the defense going to do to stop the Michigan offense?
Well, they know what Michigan's going to try and do. Michigan's going to try to run the ball, and they're going to and then set up play action and set up double moves, which they did against Florida 2 years ago. And, you know, won't be surprised to see some trick plays as well. So it's a real test for a Florida defense that a lot of people have doubted because they lost so much. But I think their starting 11's fine, but their depth at linebacker is not very good, and they're counting on a lot of young guys in the secondary to play. In fact, Marco Wilson, probably Quincy Wilson's brother, who's a true freshman, will probably start. So they've got some young guys out there. They're going to have to grow up in a hurry.
And okay, so if you were to make a prediction, what would that be?
Well, all summer I thought Florida, just because Michigan lost them. And I felt like that would be a plus for Florida. And I also thought that Florida is going to be a pretty good team. Now, the suspensions took a little wind out of that. They really hurt them in places other than Callaway in terms of depth. So that hurts. But I still like Florida in this game. I think Florida's just got better. They've got a pretty good team, and it's just a question of whether they can go out there and execute.
Well, Pat Dooley, I know there's going to be some big games for Florida throughout the season. Look forward to talking to you later. Good luck tonight in the Death Star there in Arlington, Texas.
All right, anytime, buddy.
Okay, we're joined now by, she's called the Angel of the Big House. This weekend, we're calling her the Angel of the Death Star. She is in Arlington, Texas to talk about Michigan football. We're joined by Angelique Shengelis of Detroit News. Angelique, how are you doing today? I'd really like to call you Adjunct Professor Angelique. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I didn't realize I'd been upgraded to the Death Star, but okay, I'll take it.
Well, you are in Jerry World this weekend as you take on the Florida Gators. Now, I know their flight might have been a little bit smaller from Florida to Dallas because of all the suspensions, but what does Michigan have to do on offense this week to test the Florida Gators?
Well, I think they really need to show that they can control the line of scrimmage. I mean, it's not an all-new offensive line, but they're replacing three starters from last year, and you know, two of them are younger guys, and the new center is Patrick Kugler, a fifth-year senior who's been waiting his turn and waiting patiently to win this job. So I'm really curious to see how this offensive line performs, and I've been kind of that's sort of been my thing the last few years because it's underachieved at times and not quite gelled at other times, and sometimes been pretty good. So, you know, I think this offensive line is going to face a pretty good defensive line from Florida. They'll be physical. And I'm going to be watching to see how these guys handle them. And if they can get some kind of push, then I think then it all falls into place, right, like it always does. Then your quarterback, Wilton Spate, will have some time to do what he needs to do. And all that timing he's worked on with the very young receivers will pay off. So, to me, this offense, it all starts with the offensive line and how that right side in particular performs today.
Well, we have seen all the head games between Coach Harbaugh and Coach McElwain for the past couple weeks on depth charts and everything. We know Tom Brady is not starting at quarterback. We know that Wilton Spate, it will be starting at quarterback. But when it comes to the defense, there's no Taco Charlton. But we saw last year that there was like seven or eight people that rotated in and out. How does the defensive line go up against that Florida offensive line?
Boy, from all accounts, this line, this starting group is more athletic than last year's group. That included Taco Charlton, who's down here now in Dallas, and Chris Wormley and Ryan Glasgow, who's with the Bengals. I mean, you know, that was a pretty good group. And Matt Godin, and now you've got a group with Rashawn Gary and Maurice Hurst and Brian Monet, who they've all been saying has been a beast in camp, and then you got Chase Winovich, who just operates on another level. I mean, he's sort of like Jim Harbaugh-esque in his energy level. So I think that they feel really good about this defensive line. Now, and backing them up, they came into this season thinking, okay, yeah, that might be a question mark, but Rashawn Gary rattled off the guys' names. Greg Madison, the defensive line coach, rattled off a bunch of names of guys who have really, really come along, young guys. And they're going to have a pretty good rotation, they feel like. But I would say that starting group is going to be very, very good.
Well, late Saturday afternoon when the dust settles, Florida, Michigan, who wins the game?
I had Michigan winning this game even before the suspension. But just not knowing that much about their offense, what Michigan's going to have offensively, because we really haven't seen a lot of these guys working together as this group. I just think this defense is going to be very good. And even though the secondary got called out, particularly the corners, about a week and a half ago by the coach, they did respond well in practices last week. So I think a lot of people are saying there's going to be a lot of points scored. I still think, you know, this is a new place, a neutral site. They're going to be dazzled by the stadium and the immensity of it, even though they've done walkthroughs there. I think it's going to be a slow start, and then I think Michigan will win like 28-14, 28-17, something like that.
All right, we're talking with Angelique Shengelza of the Detroit News, otherwise known as the Angel of University of Fish, because she is now an adjunct professor. It's going to be a couple of weeks till we talk to you when Air Force goes up to the big house, but I'm guarantee you we're going to be talking to you then. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Professor. I appreciate it.
We're joined now by Aaron Suttles with the Tuscaloosa News. It's game day, Bama taking on FSU. Aaron, how you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Not bad. I'm just so glad that college football is finally back. Now, we got a huge game. They're calling it the GOAT, the greatest opener of all time, opening the Mercedes-Benz Dome there in Atlanta. It's the new, what they're calling the new Taj Mahal of football, especially college football with the Hall of Fame there. Have you got a chance to look at the stadium?
Only through pictures. I'll get to see it firsthand in a couple days, but it looks pretty tremendous.
It does look like it's going to be a great field, especially, and we're going to have a great game to start it off tonight with Alabama and Florida State. So the biggest question right now is, we had a player get shot over the weekend. How is he doing?
He's back at practice. They've taken it slow with him. He missed Monday and Tuesday's practice, and then he was back up on Wednesday. I expect he'll play. I don't know if he'll start Saturday night, but I do expect Raekwon Davis to play in defensive end and be part of that rotation for Alabama.
With Jalen Hurts at quarterback and Florida State having a pretty stout defense, what do you think the key is going to be offensively for Alabama?
Running the ball. I think if they can't run the ball, then they might be in trouble. And that's no shot at Jalen Hurts whatsoever. I think even good quarterback would have a trouble with that Florida State secondary. Tavarius McFadden, they're a cornerback. They have one of the best safeties in the country. They got tremendous edge rushers. So I don't know if the new Alabama offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, wants to put his sophomore quarterback, Jalen Hurts, in a position where he needs to drop back and throw it 30 to 40 times. I think if Alabama can't run the ball, it's going to be a difficult game for him.
Now, let's flip the tables. Florida State's on offense. DeAndre Francois, there's no Dalvin Cook this year, but they do still have a good stable of running backs. What is that? Well, we know how stout the Bama defense is, but what do they have to do to shut down Florida State?
Well, you know, what they've consistently done in Nick Saban's tenure at Alabama is stop the run. And I expect, despite the losses from last year's defense, I think they'll be able to stop the run again. I think it comes down to stopping DeAndre Francois and those big receivers from making plays. When Alabama does have trouble, it's when a quarterback gets hot. They have trouble defending big receivers like Mike Williams of Clemson last year. So if they get any kind of rhythm passing, it could be a difficult night for Alabama.
Now, when everybody steps off the field Saturday night, who's going to be the winner?
I think Alabama. I think the what I mentioned, running the football, they got five really good running backs. I think they're going to try to wear Florida State down, and I think they might be able to. I haven't made up my mind where I think it's a low-scoring game or a high-scoring game, but I don't think a ton of points will be scored. But maybe in the 40s, maybe it sneaks into the 50s, but I do think both defenses will wear down a little bit in this opener, but I give the edge to Alabama just simply because they got a lot of talent on that roster.
Well, Aaron Suttles with the Tuscaloosa News, thank you for breaking down the game for us. I know we'll be talking to you throughout the season because Bama has some big ones on the schedule. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Now we're joined by Irish O'Fell of WarChant.com. It's game day, Ira. Is Knoll Nation ready?
Yeah, I mean, I think after 8 or 9 months of talking about this game, I think everybody all week was kind of ready for it to get there. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think the excitement's been building so long that people are a little bit frustrated. They just want to go ahead and see the game already.
And I know the players are ready to hit someone that's not wearing an FSU helmet or a jersey. They're ready to go hit against the Tide. Now, speaking of their defense, they're going up against Jalen Hurts, who was a great dual-threat quarterback last year. Kind of soft on the passing. You'd figure he had developed that over the offseason. What do the Noles got to do on defense to stop Alabama?
You know, I think it all starts, obviously, they've got to at least slow down the running game, and they've got to keep Hurts from kind of running wild. I mean, you watch him sometimes, and it doesn't look like he's running that hard, and then you look up, and he's 18 yards, 25 yards downfield. So he does a good job of understanding angles and pursuit, and he's tough, man. If he gets outside of the pocket, it could be a really tough task for the defense. So I think the biggest thing is they've got to slow down the running game, contain him as much as they can, and then make him have to make tough throws. If they can keep him in situations where he's got to make throws on second and long, third and long, I still don't think, even with a good offseason, I don't think he's accurate enough to make those throws. If he's in second and short and third and short all day, FSU's defense is going to have a tough time.
Now, when we turn to the offense for FSU, Dalvin Cook is gone. He's playing on Sundays already. What other than DeAndre Francois does Coach Jimbo Fisher have on offense?
You know, they've got a lot of talent at the skill positions. The running backs, it's basically as deep a group of running backs as they've had in a long, long time. The starter will be a guy named Jacquez Patrick, who's a junior, and has been Dalvin Cook's understudy for the last couple of years. He's had a good camp. He's a little bit different. He's not as explosive as Dalvin Cook. He's a bigger back. He's about 230, 235. But he's a very good running back as well. Then they've got two or three backups that they're going to try to play. They're going to try to get those guys in the game as well. One of them is a sophomore named Amir Rasul from Miami. Another one's a freshman named Cam Akers, who some people thought was the best high school running back in the country last year. Those guys will get some carries too. And I think as the game goes on, Jimbo will go with the hot hand. So Patrick's the starter, but if one of those younger guys shows a little bit more potential during the game, it wouldn't shock me if they got more carries as the game went on. And then a wide receiver, they're really talented. They're not very deep at receiver, but they're very talented. The big guys to kind of watch out for, the top three, are a junior named Nyquan Murray, if people watched FSU in the Orange Bowl, he had the two big touchdown catches, including the game winner. And then they've got two tall wide receivers. One is Auden Tate, who's about 6'5 or 6'6. He's a little bit lanky, a big target in the red zone. And then another guy who didn't get to play much last year, receiver, did more on special teams. His name is Keith Gavin, and he's a big physical receiver, about 6'3, 225, 230. And they love him. He's had a great camp. So those three will be the big targets for DeAndre Francois.
Now the dust has settled at the end of the game. Which coach is celebrating a victory?
My guess is Nick Saban. I think the one thing I didn't mention on the offense is, you know, FSU's offensive line was really suspect last year. Everybody knows that if you watch them play. And I don't know that they're going to be appreciably better. They might be a little bit better. I just think week one against that Alabama defensive front is going to be a tall task. So I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be a really entertaining game. I just don't know if FSU can block Alabama up front long enough. So I think the Tide will end up pulling it out.
I know no matter who wins, we have a good chance of seeing them both playing again once we get to the new year and both of them having a chance at the playoffs. Irish O'Fell with WarChant.com. Thank you for joining us. Look forward to talking to you throughout the season.
Sounds good. Take care.
We're joined now by Brett Zwerneman of the Houston Chronicle. Prayers go out to all of Southeast Texas with all the flooding from Hurricane Harvey. Brett Zwerneman, how you doing today, sir?
We're doing a lot better around here, and I'm based in College Station, so it's about 100 miles to the northwest of Houston. We got about 20 inches of rain around here, but nothing like what hit Houston and the Gulf Coast. So things are starting to dry out all around, though, especially in these parts. I know Houston and the Beaumont area still have a ways to go, but as you said, it's a process, but it's coming along slowly but surely.
Well, let's talk some football, because football is always good to pull our mind away from stuff like that. We've got Sunday night football tomorrow night. The Aggies taking on UCLA in the Rose Bowl. No better place for football. What do you think the Aggies have to do on offense to score against UCLA this year?
Start with have a quarterback. Kevin Sumlin still is not named a starting quarterback, and so it kind of sends some red flags up in terms of not one of the guys really separated himself from the other two. So you have three total guys, redshirt freshman Nick Starkle, true freshman Kellen Mond, and senior Jake Hubenak. And Hubenak is the only one who's even had a college snap. So I would expect the Aggies are going to lean heavily on the running game, Travion Williams, Keith Ford, especially early on in the first quarter, maybe even into the second quarter, to really kind of calm their nerves and calm the nerves of whichever quarterback happens to be in there. I suspect it will be Starkle early on, but also think you might see Kellen Mond, who's a five-star dual-threat guy. So, yeah, A&M has a lot of questions across the board going into this UCLA game, which is why I don't think I've ever anticipated an opener like this, because they do have so many questions to answer.
Now, they're going up against Josh Rosen. They've done that before, been successful with that before. What does the Aggie defense have to do this year to stop, as they call him, the Rosen one?
Yeah, they had success against him last year, but he really came on strong late. And also, that was an A&M defense that had Myles Garrett, the number one pick in the NFL draft, and Deshaun Hall on the other side at defensive end. So they were able to pressure him adequately. And still, even then, the game went into overtime. He had to put together a fourth-quarter comeback. They pushed it to overtime, and the Aggies went on their home field. So A&M has had to replace those defensive ends, and a guy named Jared Johnson and Quaylen Cunningham, two seniors who kind of patiently waited their turn and feel like they have a whole lot to prove at that position. They're going to be the ones who have to put pressure on Josh Rosen, which obviously is not going to be an easy thing for them to do. Otherwise, he's going to be able to sit back there and pick them apart. A&M's cornerbacks are in question. They've had some injuries back there, and linebacker should be okay. But, yeah, key is these defensive ends, because they're going to have to get after Rosen, and it remains to be seen whether they can do that.
Now, there is no hotter seat in college football. Well, maybe Butch Jones at Tennessee or up there in Notre Dame, but Kevin Sumlin, he gets off to hot starts, and then the past couple of years been faltering down the line. How hot is that seat in Bryan College Station this year?
Yeah, it's hot, and a big part of the reason is, you know, Texas A&M has been 8-5 in each of the last three seasons, which is okay. But 2 years ago, they opened a $500 million stadium. They pay Kevin Sumlin $5 million a year. His recruiting classes have been pretty good, and it's what you pointed out. They've stumbled down the stretch. Their record over their last 40 games in the SEC, I think, is 21-19, so kind of right there at Midland to mediocre in league play. They've really struggled in SEC West play. They lost to both Mississippi schools last year, gave up 50-plus points to LSU. So all those things add up to Kevin Sumlin being on the hot seat. In the years past, he's changed offensive coordinators a couple times. He's changed defensive coordinator, brought in John Chavis from LSU. This year, his change was the strength coach because they feel like their conditioning hasn't been what it needed to be in November. So the strength coach, it's all on him apparently this year in terms of the Aggies trying to get things right down the stretch.
Well, Brent Zornemann with the Houston Chronicle. I want to thank you for joining us on the University of Fish this morning. Big game tomorrow night in the Rose Bowl. You can hear that game live here on Extra Sports 1300. Brent, look forward to some big things from the Aggies this year and want to talk to you down the road.
You bet, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
Now, when we come back, for the first time all year long, it's time for Fish's Picks. And I've got a great guest picker for you. When we come right back here on Extra Sports 1300, I am the professor. You're listening to the University of Fish.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back to University of Fish. Now, this is a segment we haven't had for almost 9 months. It's time for Fish's Picks. We're joined by Mac Engel of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, also a prolific writer, loves talking about some Tony Romo, and I miss the old Texas Stadium as well. Mac, how you doing today?
I can't complain. I'm excited football's here. It means everything right is with the world again. We have our Saturdays and Sundays accounted for, and maybe even Thursday night and Monday nights too, so I'm excited about it.
I'm excited as well, so we're going to get right into it. We have a Mountain West team going to Big Ten land. The Cowboys taking of Wyoming taking on the Iowa Hawkeyes. Iowa's favored by 11.5. Who do you got?
You know, I have to say, this is one of those things that this whole weekend scares you because it's week one and you have no idea what you're going to see out of anybody. I was in Wyoming this summer. I was talking to some people in Laramie who were really excited about the Cowboys. And that's such a big spread. Now, I know there's a big gap between the Big Ten and the Mountain West Conference and all that stuff, but that spread is so big, and I just never have faith that Iowa will consistently show up. You know, they're up 1 year, then they're down for two, then they're up one, and they're down for three. They're totally erratic, so give me the points. Give me the Cowboys.
You know, I think I kind of got to go with you because I don't think that the Hawkeyes will see a better quarterback this year than they're going to see in Josh Allen. He is considered possibly the very top pick in this next year's NFL draft. I think 11.5 points is too much. I'm going the Cowboys with you. Now, next we have two Power 5 teams, but they're not the powers of those conferences. Cal making the cross-country trip to take on North Carolina. No Mitch Trubisky this year. North Carolina still giving up 14 there in the Golden Triangle. How do you see this one?
You know, North Carolina is one of those teams that was really one of the more erratic teams last year. You would see them last year, and then you would be so impressed. And they finished 5-3 in the ACC, but they went 8-5 overall. And they would pull a big win out, and they finished the season on a two-game losing streak. But the only thing about this game that I like for North Carolina's sake is the fact that California has to fly all the way across the United States to get there. And I don't know what the travel arrangements were. I don't know when they left, anything along those lines. But that is a massive, massive trip. Cal was only 5-7 last season. They weren't very good away from home. I'm going to take Carolina and the points on this one.
The points scare me with Carolina because I don't know what they're going to have on offense, even though Cal is going to be playing at like 8 o'clock their local time there in Berkeley. But even though they're playing out east, I think I'm going to take the Cal Bears. They can't be as bad as they were last year, and North Carolina is not going to be as good. I'm going the Cal Bears in this one. Now, this next game, Temple at Notre Dame. Notre Dame is favored by 18.5. Temple players are saying they're going to go into South Bend and win this game outright. Brian Kelly could be on a really hot seat after this game. How do you see this one?
Give me Temple in the points all the way. Now, I know Matt Rhule has left. Matt Rhule is now the head coach at Baylor University, but this is one of those games that should scare you to death if you're Notre Dame, because there's no way to win. The only way you win it
is if you win like 56-12. Everybody up in college, up in South Bend is circling that wagon up there at Brian Kelly's house because he's fired. If they don't have a good year there, he's fired. He might be fired anyways. The only guy who might be fired any quicker is Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M. That point spread is too much, and as we have seen over the last however many years, Notre Dame is Notre Dame in reputation only. That they're just not nearly as formidable as they once were, and that a team like Temple can go in there and give Notre Dame a scare, may not win it, but certainly I would take the Owls and the points.
You know, I hate to agree with you because I want some differences so someone wins in this whole thing. But the Temple Owls, they are geared up for this. I've talked with Notre Dame writers all summer long, and they're not real sold on what the offense is going to do. So that 18.5 points is way too much. Take the Temple Owls. Make you some money on that. Next, you've got an SEC team playing an FBS team. Well, actually, no, they're just a Group of Five team. And that would be Kentucky at Southern Miss. Southern Miss at home is favored 10.5 over an SEC foe. How do you see this?
That one scares me to death. One of the things that Southern Miss sort of built its reputation on there for a long time, it would be nice if they could bring it back, which was we'll play anywhere, anytime, right? And they would. They would take on some real big hitters wherever, and every now and then one of them might come into Hattiesburg and they'd give them a scare or even beat them. Obviously, that's gone for Southern Miss. You know, they were pretty good last year. They were 7-6. It's just the point spread is so big. And Kentucky, you would think, given the players that they have coming in there as an SEC school, that they could do this. Now, tell me again that point spread again.
10.5.
Kentucky is getting 10.5?
No, they're getting 10.5. Southern Miss favored by 10.5.
That's insane. Give me Kentucky and the points.
I'm going Kentucky all day long as well. I think Mark Stoops is going to have a good season there at Kentucky. Southern Miss had a great season last year. I don't think it's going to be as good this year. So take the Wildcats getting 10.5. Now talk about a big point spread, and I think this one could be a little too big as well. Louisville is traveling up to Purdue. You got the returning Heisman Trophy winner taking on one of the bottom dwellers of the Big Ten. But Purdue is getting 24.5 points at home. How do you like this one?
First game for a new head coach and Coach Braum up in West Lafayette. I'm with you on that. It's too many points. I'm sure they'll blow it out, but I could see garbage points for Purdue late. Give me the Boilermakers and the points.
And I really don't – I would never pick Purdue straight up. And I have to call him Purdue because I have a big friend that's a Michigan Big Ten guy. But Purdue with 24.5 points at home, that is too many points. Take the Boilermakers to win this one. Now we get into some games that should be a bit more competitive, lower spreads. Tennessee and Georgia Tech, they're going to be playing later. They're playing like Monday night, and that's going to be at that new Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. That's the follow-up game because, of course, Alabama-Florida State, we'll get to that in a minute. But Georgia Tech getting 3 points in Atlanta. That's their home city. They're playing the Vols. Butch Davis also on a very hot seat there in Knoxville. How do you like this one?
Can be Georgia Tech. I mean, it's essentially a home game for Georgia Tech. And even though Tennessee keeps bringing in players, they're one of the most disappointing teams in the United States. For whatever reason, they have not been able to get back to the level on national prominence that Phil Fulmer had them rolling at for a while when Peyton Manning was there or T. Martin and those guys. They've had nice players at Tennessee, but they haven't had good teams since that run ended. Give me Georgia Tech. I don't know how good Georgia Tech's going to be this season. The fact that it's a glorified home game. And I know Atlanta's only 3.5 hours away from Knoxville, much closer to the border, obviously, in Tennessee. There'd be a lot of Tennessee fans there. Give me Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech last year was in contention there in the ACC in their division. I think Georgia Tech's going to actually possibly take that division this year. I think Tennessee is once again a pretender, as they have been the past few years. They can end up fourth or fifth in the SEC East. Take Georgia Tech, getting 3 points, got to take it. Virginia Tech, another ACC team, taking on a Big 12 team. This is Virginia Tech, West Virginia. Virginia Tech's giving up 4.5 against Dana Holgorsen and the Mountaineers. How do you like this one?
West Virginia. I think this is one of those dangerous games if you're Virginia Tech. I don't know how good West Virginia is going to be, but they're always, you know, under Dana Holgorsen, they really have sort of established themselves and what their niche is, and they do it pretty well. You know, they it would be better if they could find some guys on defense, because that's usually been one of his problems since he's gone to Morgantown. But I think for a season opener, even though Georgia Tech may be, or pardon me, Virginia Tech may be better by season's end in week one, give me West Virginia.
I think what West Virginia's offense is going to be something that Virginia Tech sees never again the rest of this season. And granted, they've had all the offseason to gear up for it. I don't think they've done enough. Fuente is going to have a great season at Virginia Tech, but I got to take Dana Holgorsen and the Mountaineers as well. Now, Texas A&M is traveling to the Rose Bowl. This is Sunday night football. Going to UCLA, Josh Rosen has given up 3.5 points to the Aggies. Like you said, Sumlin could be on the hottest seat in the nation right now because they don't like losing in College Station. How do you see this one?
But Texas A&M has started every year under Kevin Sumlin really well. You know, 3-1, 5-0, 4-1, stuff like that. And then they have fallen apart in each of the last three seasons without Johnny Manziel. That's why they finished 8-5 each of the last 3 years. They, they're starting yet another new quarterback for, I believe, the fourth straight season. They're having a new quarterback starting the regular season. They lost the defensive player of the year to the draft in Myles Garrett. They've produced NFL talent. What they haven't done is produce a top five caliber team since Johnny Manziel's first year there, when they were sensational, really. Now they're going to a place against a team they beat last year in College Station. But I got to tell you, I think it's just, you talk about circling the wagons. I think it's coming apart for Kevin Sumlin this year. I don't think he's going to make it to next season. Give me UCLA. Give me the senior quarterback and Josh Rosen.
Well, I just talked with Brett Zwerneman of the Houston Chronicle, who covers the Aggies each and every day, and he has no idea who's going to play quarterback because only one guy is taking snaps there at A&M, and I think Josh Rosen's going to light up that defense because they're not going to have the pass rush they did last year, like you said, Myles Garrett being gone. Josh Rosen giving up 3.5, that's not near enough. Take the UCLA Bruins. Now a game that's pretty much in your backyard, but two teams that are far away from you, Michigan, giving up 5, taking on the Florida Gators. They're at Jerry World in Arlington. How do you like this one?
I got to go with Michigan, and only because Florida has suspended so many good players. And it's not like Florida has suspended players from, you know, just a great team, although Florida, certainly under Coach McElvain, has done better than, you know, than any of his predecessors, recent predecessors, that's for sure. I think Michigan, under Jim Harbaugh, is going to roll this year. Now, I don't know if they're going to be good enough to beat Ohio State. That game is in Ann Arbor, but we're obviously months and months away from it. I think in this case, Michigan will continue to take on the personality of their head coach, and that is going to be a very tough, difficult, physical team to beat. And on this game, even though the point spread is 5, I like Michigan.
You know, I think I like Michigan as well because, like you said, they're taking on the attitude of their coach, and Harbaugh has been very tight to the vest with everything about leading into this game. And like you said, McElwain's run, his program's not near as dirty as it was under Urban Meyer, but when you see all these suspensions, it's got to hurt you at some point. And the Wolverines are in store for a great season, and they're going to start it off right in Jerry World. Give up the 5 points, take the Wolverines, go Blue. That brings us to what they're calling the GOAT, the greatest opener of all time, Alabama, Florida State, number 1 versus number 3. I think after seeing Ohio State play Thursday night, you could probably put Florida State number 2 because Ohio State has no defensive backfield. Alabama giving up 7 points. This game will be christening the first real game there at the Mercedes-Benz Dome in Atlanta. The Crimson Tide, the Noles. What do you think?
Until somebody tells me otherwise, I can't bet against Alabama. Now, remember, if Alabama were to lose, that would be consecutive losses. Now, I realize they're, you know, 7-8 months apart, but still, it's just, I just can't see Alabama losing, because the one thing, and Florida State under Jimbo Fisher has they've done this really well too, which is to build dominant lines. And, you know, their quarterback is going to be a second-year player now. Jalen Hurd is going to be a second-year player. I think I got that name right.
You did.
And I know Lane Kiffin is gone, and you know he was well-respected and well-regarded as an offensive coordinator. But I just think if when you look at the team that Alabama usually fields up front offensively, and especially on that defensive line and their front seven overall, I'm just not going to bet against them. Even if they're down, I just can't bet against them yet. I know teams are going to get them. I know this run of success that Nick Saban has at Alabama will eventually end. And who knows, maybe it'll be this year. I don't think it will be. But until I see it, I'm not betting against it. Roll Tide.
You know what, and I got to agree with you because the front seven is going to be so strong for Alabama. Even though DeAndre Francois is going to be a good quarterback for Florida State this year, I think that front seven is going to be too strong, and they're too loaded at running back for Alabama, and I think that they're going to just run all over and leave it out of Jalen Hurts' hands. He's not going to have to throw the ball as much. He'll just have to do short, controlled passes. I think Alabama rolls big in this game. Florida State could be shown to almost be a pretender, but everybody's been saying you could lose this game and still make it to the playoffs. I think if Florida State rights the ship afterwards, it's possible. But Alabama, Roll Tide, roll. Well, Mac Engel, we'll find out who does better on our picks this week. And just a reminder to all the listeners, this is only for entertainment purposes. Do not bet money and then get mad at me because you lost, because my wife gets mad at me enough when I do that. Mac, thanks for joining us today.
All right, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend. Appreciate you having me.
There you have it, the first edition of Fish's Picks. We're going to have a guest picker each and every week. And what we're going to do this year, I'm going to keep a spreadsheet. We're going to act like you put 20 bucks on each game, and we're going to see how you would fare if you were betting. I'm telling you not to, but if you were betting, how you would fare throughout the year on Fish's Picks. Now, all the talking is done. It's time to play some football. Coming up next here on Extra Sports 1300, we have the other football show, little soccer talk before we get into college football, just a couple hours away from all the games kicking off. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy football. It is back. We'll be back next week. Big game next week, Oklahoma, Ohio State. We'll be talking to both sides of that, just like we did with Michigan and Florida. Alabama, Florida State, we'll be doing the same thing next week for all the big games. Also, Auburn, Clemson next week. We'll talk about it next week. See you on the other side. I'm Tim Fisher. You're listening to the University of Fish. Class dismissed.